Asif Rashid lives in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and is working on community organizing against the Atlantica Free Trade Zone. He sat down with Macho Filipovich last week for the following interview.
Asif, can you tell us what Atlantica is?
Where Atlantica came from, going back to 2001, there's a man named Brian Lee Crowley. He's the president of the Atlantic Institute for American Studies, which is a right-wing think tank that focuses on trying to promote the ideals of free trade. Basically, they're avowed capitalists that want to keep like advancing on their objectives in this region. He made a speech to Eastern Canadian premiers and New England governors calling for this idea of Atlantica, this transportation energy corridor, making the Atlantic provinces in the northeastern state a gateway to bring cheap commodities through the region and into the heartland of consumption in the United States, as well as to make the region an energy hub to move more energy into the energy-starved, so to speak, United States.
And what region are you talking about specifically?
The region, all the Atlantic provinces, and including the Gaspé part of Quebec, and then Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and upstate New York.
Okay.
And that's the Atlantica region that's been selected. So it's like a transportation and energy corridor, as well as a free trade zone. So within that region, they're looking to reduce environmental and labor standards so they can keep their bottom lines, so to speak. And the highlight of it all is this, the port of Halifax, which is one of the world's deepest ports. So the proponents of Atlantica, like Brian Lee Crowley and the Atlantic Provinces Chamber of Commerce, which came aboard in 2005, and other big corporations in the region, see this port of Halifax as being a place where they can dock these giant post-Panamax ships, which are too big to fit through the Panama Canal. Mm. So what they do is they go through what's called the Suez Express route. So it's taking stuff from China, going through the Mediterranean, going through the Suez, and then across the Atlantic, and then docking in the port of Halifax, which they're trying to sell as a cheaper way to get materials into this heartland of consumption in the States, like a cheaper way to do it than going around the other way, like through West Coast ports and that. You know, so it's like they're looking at this business model for like basically like keeping their profit margins high and while the Panama Canal isn't deep enough to send these mega ships through, then they can dock these mega ships at this port and basically keep their profits high by shipping stuff in more bulk on these giant ships rather than on smaller ships.
And how has that all affected, like you mentioned, labor and environmental standards?
Well, so Atlantica, back in 2001, it was just an idea that was being pushed by certain people like Brian Lee Crowley. And in 2005, the Atlantic Province Chamber of Commerce came on board and endorsed it. And that's a big organization that has 12,000 businesses that back it up. So when they came on board, it became a bigger deal, and they started holding conferences. And the first conference they held, the big one, was in June 2006, which is called Reaching Atlantica Business Without Boundaries, like kind of making it obvious what they stood for. And at that conference, they were pushing for removal of what they called barriers to trade, or at that conference, they're calling it public policy distress factors, which were minimum wage legislation, union density, amongst other things, which made it pretty obvious they're trying to do is change the rules so that they can basically make more money off the backs of people and not care too much about the costs that they're wreaking on the environment, but just like making as much profit as possible by changing the rules, basically. So that was made really abundantly clear at that conference, and the conference was met with a protest on the outside, and folks managed to get into the conference center, but then they were repelled by the police. So that was like the first moment where it became a big deal, where people were suddenly like protesting it. And the next year, they did another conference in Halifax, which is reaching it or something. Atlantica charting the course, which was also test still. So. But they've been pretty open about wanting to break down environmental standards. It's been said by the key figures in it, the Province Chamber of Commerce and the Institute for American Studies, about how they want to change labor policy, environmental policy, et cetera.
You mentioned the two protests that happened. Is there, or was there, an ongoing group that was, or a group of people that was organizing and mobilizing against this? And how did that come to be?
Well, back in 2006, what happened was a bunch of people in Fredericton found out about this conference and made the connections pretty easily. It was pretty obvious what it was. It was a big, like, corporate proposal, which was designed to just advance the interests of capitalism in the region. People saw it, and it was just a bunch of people that in Fredericton that got together and said, "It's got to get the word out around the region." Contacted people throughout the region, and encouraged other people to organize. Encouraged labor unions to organize. Encouraged people more at the grassroots, anarchists, to organize and confront the conference. Just to do whatever it took to actually create as much opposition as possible to it, and while obviously with the intent of trying to shut down the whole Atlantic idea. But that started off just with a random group of people. There was no, like, collective or any kind of like named group. It was just people that gathered together and then managed to organize in that fashion, just by bringing people together and then coordinating.
In the past, a lot of the big actions in organizing against a lot of these free trade blocs have been stuff like in Quebec City in 2001 and against the FTAA, which was mostly organized in Montreal, bigger stuff against APEC in Vancouver, a lot of stuff in bigger cities. Were there special challenges or opportunities that were available through organizing in smaller cities, smaller towns?
Well, it was a bit different. I was at the one in Quebec, and I've been at one in Montreal over WTO a few years ago as well. And I know in those environments, there's a lot more cities that are closer by, like big city centers. Around here, you got like Halifax, and then that's the big city in the east. And then, well, you have St. John, Newfoundland, which is so far away from everything else. And then there's a bunch of little towns. There's also like St. John and Moncton and other cities that are in New Brunswick. But like in Nova Scotia, the big city is Halifax. And I don't know. It seemed like at the time when we were trying to bring people together, the networks weren't really as they were in the past. I know that when Quebec City was going on during that whole time, it's considered a bit more of a heyday for certain radical networks. There was like Mobilization for Global Justice and other networks. There was anarchist networks that existed at the time that helped to mobilize people. But really what we noticed back in 2006, we just needed to create something. We needed to recreate networks that were no longer there, because there wasn't this like regional movement to oppose anything. And then suddenly we're faced with Atlantica, which is obviously a regional proposal by big capital in the region to, like, they're coordinated as fuck. Like, they have their stuff together, and they're really organizing in a regional way. And then, you know, obviously if they're not responded to through any like kind of like strong like regional like opposition, even if it is like super decentralized, at least like people are aware of each other's efforts. If we're not doing that, then they're obviously in a position of advantage.
Can you give a bit of an idea of what that regional organizing looked like?
What it looked like back then?
Yeah, sure.
Or not.
It was an attempt to try to build something. And for 2006, some people came from Nova Scotia, a decent number of people. It wasn't huge. It was like, I can't even remember, probably like a couple of dozen. And then there's a bunch of people that came from Fredericton, probably around the same amount. And then St. John, a few people here and there. And that was considered more of like the rad crew that showed up at the St. John action. And then there's a bunch of people that were like more involved in the environmental movement and like labor unions that also were around. But there was clearly a separation between the two groups in terms of like what actions people are doing. So it seemed like only certain cities pulled people, like mainly Fredericton and Halifax, to be honest, in the 2006 that pulled people out. I don't know, maybe a handful of people here and there from other towns and cities, like New Brunswick, but really small amount. There wasn't cities bringing a bunch of the people out, like, from each city. It was basically like a couple of cities mainly that brought more of the radical scene out, and the labor unions brought people out from like around the province of New Brunswick. And then Halifax the next year, it was I don't really know, I'm not really aware of like where everyone came from, but in Halifax there was a lot more of like obvious anarchist presence in the form of a black bloc, which brought people from beyond the East Coast. It brought people from other parts of the country, which showed that at least the issue had resonated beyond the region.
And so is that when there was a police response?
Yeah, well, at both. In St. John, there was three arrests. There was definitely a police response. In Halifax, there was more of an intense police interaction with the people who were opposing Atlantica.
Were the three arrests, or were there arrests more arrests later on?
Well, in the St. John one, there was only three arrests, and that was it. And then Halifax, the year later, it was 21, so it was significantly larger. But there were more people, that's for sure. And the more radical presence was definitely larger in Halifax.
So what happened to folks when they were arrested in Halifax?
Well, people arrested in Halifax, 18 of the 21 rotted in jail for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. We were held in jail over the weekend, and they did that in order to ensure that we wouldn't go back outside and participate in any other anti-Atlantic actions. It was jail, like a few days of jail for people that were arrested in Halifax.
And have those court cases, were there charges laid there?
Yeah, there were. There was a number, I think a total of 70.
Yeah.
If you add up all the charges together collectively for all the people arrested. And in the end, like right now, there's only four people left that, I'm one of them, that are left dealing with the charges. All the rest have been processed. Many of them received adult diversion. I think almost everyone received adult diversion.
Okay, and do the people left still have outstanding bail conditions and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's kind of the problem, is that even though this whole incident was 2007 when the action happened, there's still like this ongoing court battle that's holding people down with bail conditions, which is like just an extension of prison. We're still stuck having to deal with non-association conditions, and certain people are restricted from going to any kind of protest or public demonstration, which basically includes even like rallies, which are really, just passive rallies that just have some sort of political context to it. That's illegal for people that have conditions on them to go to, which is kind of ridiculous. But there's still a few conditions that are on people that are still dealing with this, and yeah, the battle goes on with that.
How much has that held back organizing?
Well, it definitely has definitely had its impact, because I'm sure the state's totally aware of that. They're taking out certain people that were really involved in organizing, but I think as everyone who's involved in organizing circles knows, there's always other people that step up. It's just kind of difficult for the people who are used to being more involved to take steps, I wouldn't say back, but aside, and get involved in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
In order to sustain the same kind of politics, in order to do the same, like education along the same lines, and maybe they can't, not everyone can be involved so much in the thick of the action, but at least they can be involved in helping organize in different ways. Like, there's promo stuff that's needed. There's all kinds of stuff that is still useful that people that are under these conditions can do, but it's just the fact that people are restricted from doing everything they want to do is just a bit of a burden on people personally.
Has there been any crossover between folks active around Atlantica and kind of the day-to-day consequences of Atlantica, stuff like privatization or like attacks on labor standards, environmental stuff, with linking it into Atlantica?
Yes, one of the big problems is that since the 2007 demonstration that happened, series of actions, I should say, there wasn't just a demonstration. Since that's happened, there's just been a completely bottoming out of resistance to Atlantica. There was a lot of, repercussions out of that, those actions, that there was the fallout from all the arrests, all the legal support that was needed, and just certain people in the area feeling uncomfortable about the radical mindset of the people that had been arrested. You know, just the fact that people were participating in Black Bloc tactics that offended certain more liberal sensibilities in the area, that definitely had an impact on people's abilities to work together. So there was kind of this fraying that happened, which definitely wasn't helpful. And even though Atlantic is still moving super fast, there's like these projects are rolling out. There's port developments that are taking place in Strait of Canso in Sydney. There's energy projects that are rolling out. There's highway projects that are being built. And it's just a huge list of projects that are all going ahead, hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the region. It's billions. And yet there's not this resistance that's trying to at least challenge it. I think that has a lot to do with perhaps how overwhelming it might seem to a lot of people, that how big Atlantica is. And yes, environmental standards and labor standards, transportation rules are changing. Like, I have documentation of actual changes being made, and people know about it, but I think people are probably feeling a little overwhelmed by how big it is. And that's kind of what led to this other action idea that is being proposed right now, which is the May Day action, like starting with May Day and then going for a whole week, like a week of action on Atlantica, which is being promoted around the region, encouraging people throughout the region, wherever they're faced with an Atlantica development or where they can mobilize people to respond to these like labor standard changes or environmental standard changes, to actually respond, to organize like everything from educational events to creative actions to more like over forms of resistance, like basically try to incite people to think about the creation of more autonomous communities through like the resistance, through like seeing possibilities.
So if people are listening in the Atlantic region or just happen to want to learn more, where can they find out more about this week of action in May?
Well, there's a website, it's just no-atlantica.org, and that's a site which has the call out for May Day on it. And yeah, that same call that's on that website been sent around the region, and not really aware of what people are doing around the region, but a lot of people have received that call out, and I've received it, you know, lots of people have it, and now I'm sure people are looking at it in their own communities and figuring out what to do in response. And the hope is that it got out to a lot of radically minded people who are interested in organizing various kinds of educational events and actions to try to further along, try to build more resistance. Like, basically, that's the hope that I have personally, and I think that needs to happen. Like, people got to get excited about the idea of asserting autonomy and creating these resistance movements that are beyond our community and can be like interconnected a bit more.
I'm just going back to before you were talking about Black Bloc tactics. Just in case people aren't familiar with that, can you describe what that is?
Well, it's just a concept. Basically, it's the whole idea of people all like dressing up in black in order to blend together. Everyone's got masks on, and it's created this anonymity, and that's done for more than one reason. It's done because as is well known, pigs are always trying to, and the state are always trying to pick out the leaders, but if everyone looks the same, they can't use their tactics of trying to divide and conquer groups by picking out who they perceive to be leaders, because everyone looks kind of the same. It also creates this idea of everyone being on the same level. There's no within the group, everyone is aware that like there is this anarchist ideal that is motivating the bloc, that there's not supposed to be any leaders or hierarchy. We're all in together too. It's like the color unites us, so we're all there to support each other as well. I think it there's so many interpretations of what it really means, but it's just signifying anarchist resistance and put certain kinds of politics, I would say. And it doesn't always have to be black. There are pink blocks, there are all kinds of blocks, but I think the whole idea of anarchist blocks is just to show unity and demonstrate a certain kind of politics and yeah, and also show that anonymity can be useful, just so that people aren't pointed out and singled out and harassed by the state. Like, as soon as they arrest you, they'll do all kinds of things. I mean, that's what I've experienced personally, to make your life more difficult, even for like 2 years, based on like pretty well flimsy, like charges of, you know, against like unlawful assembly charges, which are still like pending before the courts, and things like that, which are just so minor that they could actually hold you down for 2 years based on that. It's, well, it just shows it's political. It's not about like anything other than just trying to, trying to criminalize
dissent. You kind of have to ask about the economic meltdown these days. How do you think that plays into issues of free trade, globalization, and these kind of movements?
Well, around here, I think it's pretty interesting because we've got China, which is identified as being the big source of all these commodities that are supposed to roll through the Atlantic region. And on the other end of that gateway, or doormat, as they call it, is the consumption markets in the United States. So with this economic crisis going on, I'm aware that in China, production levels have slid, and we've got people that are actually leaving urban areas and moving to rural areas in certain places, which demonstrates a certain loss of production in China, which I think connects directly to the fact that the consumption in the States has gone down because people don't have as much money because of the economic crisis, job loss, etc. So if Atlantic is right in the middle, then people got to start asking some questions. Like, all right, if Atlantic is supposed to be the gateway, and the premise of Atlantic is that the trade from China is growing, and that has to do with the fact that consumption in the States is supposed to be growing, then, okay, we got a problem if all that's false. And neither consumption in the States is growing, nor is production in China growing, but everything is sinking. Then Atlantic is in the middle of it all, and that just brings up a lot of questions over, okay, so what does that mean for all these supposed jobs that are coming in, and, you know, like, supposed economic growth, so to speak, in the region? I think it's all bunk, and these corporations that are getting the money for their different projects are probably aware that, that they might not have their projects go anywhere. Some of them probably go in this vain hope. Others are probably feeling like they get it at minimum, at least have the money. They'll gain that capital from having this government money getting into their hands and borrowing money from the like lending institutions, and they'll just have it, and then they can cut and run. It's easy for them. They have the capital to just take off and then leave the region in wreckage. And yeah, I think it's an advantage to people that are involved in resistance to point all this out, and the shit hits the fan and through the region, all the people are seeing is more and more unemployment, and they see Atlantic as a big lie, then it'll create more opportunity for people building resistance community to community, like while people are looking for something different. And I think that's pretty exciting. Yeah, I mean, we'll be able to like perhaps get more ears for some of our arguments about but just like the environmental destruction, the social destruction, the theft of indigenous lands for the whole region. There's like so many indigenous nations through Atlantic, and none of them are ever talked about. When the Atlantic proponents are speaking about their big projects, they just ignore the fact that it's on unceded lands.
That was about all I had. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Well, I don't know. I guess just... again, I encourage people to check out the website for updates. I guess it's probably the easiest way for people in that region to find out. No-Atlantica.org, which lists, will hopefully keep updates happening about what's going on with the Week of Action. People can at least be informed about that and hopefully get excited in other parts of, you know, of colonial Canada, at least know that there's stuff going on elsewhere. The hope is that it will really spur on and it'll be something that can inspire people around this region, and then hopefully that will inspire people in other areas, vice versa, you know.
Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us, Asa.
All right.
You have been listening to an interview with Asif Rashid and Macho Filipovic on Black Mass, the frequency of resistance, CKUW 95.9 FM.